This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is David Corton, co-founder and board chair of Yes Magazine, co-chair of the New Economy Working Group, and president of the Living Economies Forum. David is also a former Harvard Business School professor and author of the international bestsellers When Corporations Rule the World and The Great Turning. David Corton is here today to tell us about his most recent book, Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth, published in 2015. Welcome, David.
Delighted to be on your show again, Diane.
Why are the stories we live by important?
Yeah, the basic answer, it's a very good question, is we humans live by stories. To me, our defining nature is the fact that we, of the many species, have an extraordinary ability to, in a sense, choose our nature, to choose the story by which we live. Do we live as individuals, money-seeking robots, all captives to a market economy, or do we live as members of community? Do we honor life? What are the things that give us happiness? These are all things that we basically choose in common by our shared stories. And we're generally not aware of it because our minds are so keyed to enculturating into whatever story we are born so that we fit into our tribe, our society, with shared values and shared assumptions. Now we're in a situation where, as a global species, we have to choose our story. Most of the stories by which we have been living don't work anymore. And we now have a corporate-controlled media and basically a corporate-controlled educational system that has learned to shape our stories in ways that serve the system, serve essentially, put it bluntly, the corporate elite. And we're just waking up to the fact that that story is a fabricated story, that our future depends on a fundamental rethinking and embracing a new shared story that is more consistent with our nature and more consistent with the sum total of human knowledge.
In your book, you talk about a sacred markets and money story, and you've started alluding to this, but what is this story and how does it affect the society we live in?
I actually want to share a story before I get into that. In March 2012, it was just before the Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit, the 20th anniversary of the Earth Summit in Rio, I was invited to a small gathering of international indigenous environmental leaders. They were talking about this conference, planning their input to it, and noting that the Wall Street interests, the corporate interests were there, making the case that, yes, we must save nature. To save nature, we must value her. If we are to value nature, we must put a price on her. And the indigenous leaders immediately recognized, oh, you put a price on her, then she's up for sale, privatize, commodify, gamble on her by securitizing and so forth, another Wall Street money scam. They also realized if there's a price, it means the rich own her. And they were saying, Earth is actually our sacred mother. She is the source of our birth and nurture. We do not sell our mother. We honor our mother. We work to secure her health. And one of the presentations was by Karmath Sateem, who heads the Bhutan, you know, this country Bhutan, their Gross National Happiness Commission. And this, of course, is a country that takes a very different view of economic development. At the end of his presentation, he said three words, time is life. Time is life. That just struck into my soul. You know, I'm a product of a business school education. My dad was a businessman. He taught me that time is money. And that is the whole theme of business school education, economics education, most public policy education. And it just really burned in my consciousness, wow, here are two totally different frames. Do we live as if time is life? Time is for living, our lives are for living? Or do we live as if time is money and our lives are for making money. So anyhow, that's kind of a defining frame of thinking about the two distinguishing stories of our time. And the first, as you mentioned, the one we live by now is the sacred money and market story. And it starts with time as money. Money is wealth. Making money creates jobs. Those who make money are society's wealth creators. Making money is the defining purpose of people, of business, and the economy, essentially the defining purpose of our lives. The rich are society's wealth creators. Affluent lifestyles are their fair and just reward. Material consumption is our duty to consume because material consumption drives prosperity and is the path to happiness. Poverty is a consequence of laziness. The earth belongs to us. Earth was created for our pleasure, for our gratification. And then on our human nature, that defining story, it is our human nature to be individualistic, competitive, and acquisitive. Now, fortunately, guided by the invisible hand of the free market, these beneficial traits unleash the creative potential of humanity to grow the economy, to grow wealth, to end poverty, and to drive the technological innovation required to eliminate our human dependence on nature. So then within that frame, the community interest is simply an aggregation of the individual private interests of its individual members. We therefore all do best when we each focus individually, personally, on maximizing our own individual interest, which usually translates into maximizing our own private financial return. And then we look at corporations. They're just groups of people working in common cause. And corporations are the engines of wealth creation. And of course, as groups of people, they're entitled to the same rights as any person. Now, we hear this story constantly repeated in the media. It is literally taught in school, in any school that offers an economics course. And in some instances, it is even preached from our church pulpits. God wants you to be rich. Now, if you listen carefully and thought about each of those statements, every one of them is false or grossly misleading. And they provide a frame for an economy that is basically devoted to converting life into money, which is simply an accounting system, an accounting chit. Money has no intrinsic value of its own. And as that plays out, our conversion of life into money and living in an economy that is designed around maximizing returns to money, what we're really doing is maximizing financial returns to people who already have money. And since money is the accounting system, it's essentially the power chits by which we divide up power in society. It means we move toward an ever greater concentration of wealth. And since the whole system is built around the destruction of life to make money, the inevitable outcome there is the destruction of our natural environment, the destruction of the health and well-being of people. The concentration of wealth also assures the death of democracy, because it means the power is concentrated in a small group of people who are using that power simply to maximize their financial return, which means the ever-increasing growth of their own power. So we live in that story. That story is, at its core, a cause, a source of the incredible dysfunctions of society that we currently experience.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is David Korten, author of Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Why is the sacred money and market story so prevalent?
Well, it's because it serves very well the interests of the corporate elite and their dedication to increasing their own power, increasing their own wealth. It, of course, it is the story we are taught in economics. You know, economics, which is supposedly the study of how we manage our economic resources to maximize human well-being, is essentially bought and paid for by the ruling elite because it focuses our attention on money as our defining value, and it justifies a system of injustice and destruction. And it's, you know, so perverse that economics presents itself as settled science. These are premises. These are proven conclusions not to be questioned. You know, I love the statement of Joseph Stiglitz, who was a Nobel laureate economist and an economist that really understands the reality of economics, who notes that economics is actually more a religion. It's not really a science. It's a faith-based religion. And as we go deeper into the history of economics, we know it's basically a made-up discipline that involved taking a formula, a mathematical model from physics, substituting economic variables for physical variables, and declaring economics a science, even though those variables had absolutely nothing to do with the real world. I'm also quite fond of Pope Francis' observation that it's not really money that's evil. Our problem is the worship of money as our God, as a false God. And I think those two statements, economics as a religion devoted to the worship of a false God, captures at a very deep level our situation. And it is part of our human nature that we crave meaning. We absolutely have to have some source of meaning in our lives. What is the purpose of our lives? Where did we come from? Why? Why do we exist? What's the nature of the deeper reality in which we find ourselves? And this story has been inserted. The sacred money and market story has been inserted, taught to us, constantly repeated in the media. And so we organize around it. But increasingly, people are waking up to the fact that it makes no sense. It does not work. It does not bring us happiness. And it certainly does not bring us well-being as a species.
In your book, you propose a more positive story, the Sacred Life and Living Earth story. What is this story, and how might it change the nature of our society?
Yeah, it starts with the phrase from Karma Sutim, time is life, which means that the time we have on this earth is about living. Within this story, real wealth is living wealth. Money's just a number. It's useful as a medium of exchange in well-regulated markets. But the deeper reality is we humans are living beings born of and nurtured by a living earth, a living earth itself born of a living universe. Life exists only in community. Life organizes as a community to maintain the conditions essential for life. We must be a part of that community because we are a part of nature. We are not apart from nature. Earth does not belong to us. We belong to Earth, and our health and prosperity absolutely depend on Earth's health and prosperity. Our human nature, and this is part of what brain science is finding, that our brains are actually wired to give us a predisposition to care and to share for the benefit of all, for the, you know, the members of the tribe, the members of the community. Serving the living community that sustains us is essential to community health. And serving that community is, in fact, the source of our greatest individual personal happiness. Now, here's the just incredible insight that puts the lie to conventional economics and its narrow individualistic assumptions about human nature. The reality is that individualistic greed, ruthless competition, and violence against life, these are indicators of serious psychological and societal dysfunction. They are the characteristics of the psychopath or a sociopath. As for poverty, we're realizing that most poverty is the consequence of a lack of opportunity. It's a consequence of an economy that, in its concentration of wealth and power, provides, by its nature, opportunity only for the few, and excludes the many from any possibility of moving out of a condition of daily desperation for a means of living. We're waking up to the reality that the only legitimate purpose of any human institution, whether it be business, government, or civil society, is to support people as productive, contributing, sharing members of a vibrant and prosperous living Earth community. Now we come to corporations. Corporations that seek to monopolize resources and decision-making power in the pursuit of purely financial ends to the exclusion of the many have no place in a healthy society. So you take this sacred life and living Earth story, you contrast it with the sacred money and market story, and you see that we have a frame for organizing society in very, very different ways to serve fundamentally conflicting, contrasting values. And, you know, that's the focus of this book, Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth, that if we make that story shift, basically everything has to change in terms of how we organize the economy, what values it serves, how we engage people, how we think about money, and so forth. So it's a very big agenda, but on the other hand, at the most basic level, it is just obvious everyday common sense that life is about living. Our purpose is to live. Life requires living and service in community as creative individuals, creative beings. So that's in a nutshell the story of Change the Story, Change the Future.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is David Corton, author of the book Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth. How would an individual citizen approach their day, and what decisions might they make if they embrace a sacred life and living Earth story rather than a sacred money and market story?
Well, they would do the kinds of things that people all over the world are beginning to do as they wake up to this new story. They would be reaching out to their neighbors to rebuild communities. They would be shopping locally. They'd be working with their local businesses, their local government to give priority to buy local, to local businesses that are owned by and rooted in the community. If they run a business, they would realize that the real benefit from their business, they definitely need to make a fair profit to maintain the business. But their returns from the business are not just financial profit, they are also the benefits of living in a healthy community with a healthy natural environment. They would be moving their money to local financial institutions. They would be favoring smaller homes that require less consumption and are not status symbols but are comfortable and easy to live. They would be working on urban gardens, urban agriculture. They would be the youth who are going back, returning to the land, to the farms, restoring soils, restoring the healthy water systems. They would be bicycling wherever they can rather than taking a car. They would be involved in the campaigns like promoting a constitutional amendment to strip corporations of personhood rights and get corporate money out of politics. They would be campaigning right now with their Congress people to block this Trans-Pacific Partnership agreement that Obama and the corporate interests are trying to push through to strengthen corporate rights at the expense of community rights. They would be working on developing buildings that are heat efficient, that use solar energy, that recycle their water, that use composting toilets. They'd be fighting fracking and coal trains, and they would be fighting for racial justice and joining with black communities to demilitarize police and recognize that we must have justice for all. So these are all the kinds of things that people would be doing. They are the things that people, in fact, are doing all over the world. But we need to also, as we do them, be more upfront about telling the larger story of, yes, we are living beings. We are rebuilding living communities and living economies that bring us into balance with the Earth and one another.
How would our approach to addressing climate change be different, and what specific steps might be taken working with the sacred life and living Earth story?
Yeah, climate change is very interesting. If, you know, a deeper part of that story is recognizing that in the earliest stages of evolution on Earth, over billions of years, the simplest of single-cell organisms organized as a global community working with the physical geological process of the Earth to terraform the surface of this planet, fundamentally change the conditions on the surface of the planet to make way for more complex forms of life to emerge. Part of that was sequestering excess carbons and toxins deep underground so that we could have an oxygen-rich climate that would at the same time moderate the rays of the sun, maintain a stable temperature appropriate to human needs, with a chemical composition appropriate to human needs, and chemical composition of the oceans, every aspect of the planet, our planet, which differs, distinguished significantly from the conditions on the surface of any other planet we know. Now, instead of honoring that and recognizing it, we develop our economy around taking those toxins and carbons out of the ground as fast as we can to suppress the natural cycles of Earth that maintain the conditions essential for our existence. It's an act of collective suicide. So we would keep those carbons in the ground. We'd be working to restore our soils. We would absolutely prohibit any kind of fracking or oil sands development that destroys our water supplies, which we are dependent on in perpetuity in order simply to get a quick energy fix, again, to suppress nature. So that's a quick story on climate change.
How would our approach to addressing inequality be different working with the Sacred Life and Living Earth story compared to the current Sacred Money and Market story?
Well, in the Sacred Money and Market story, money is wealth, making money creates wealth, and so we manage the economy to maximize financial returns to money. If you manage the economy that way, you absolutely guarantee an ever greater concentration of wealth because you're guaranteeing ever greater financial returns to those people who already have money. If we were really concerned about equality, we would recognize that it really is returns to life that is essential to a healthy society. We would recognize that the equitable sharing of our common heritage resources from nature, from the accumulated infrastructure and knowledge structure of human society, that the only just approach is for that to be equitably shared. And we would recognize that ownership is the foundation of real power and would be working for broad participation in ownership, essentially breaking down the class division between the people who own and those who work in servitude to those who own. I often say that I believe in private ownership, that I believe it's such a good thing everybody should have some. People should literally own their means of producing their own livelihood. And so we would be moving for cooperative ownership and, you know, moving for tax policies, philanthropy, and so forth that are oriented to creating very broad participation in the ownership of productive assets.
What evidence do you see that the money and market story is losing credibility and a new story is coming into play?
Well, it's all the things that I mentioned earlier that people are doing in terms of rebuilding their communities and their local economies. And, you know, Yes Magazine, which I co-founded and which I serve as board chair, our whole mission is to tell the story, share the story, spread the word of what people are doing, how they're doing it, what are the stories of their success, of what works. And you don't read those stories generally in the corporate press because the corporate media is not interested in letting us know what the alternatives are and certainly not in promoting it. But if you go to Yes Magazine, yesmagazine.org, you can find those stories and get the lessons. We have a quarterly journal, and we post daily on the web. But the stories are endless, and they are happening all over the world, and they are the source. For me, they're a great source of hope and possibility.
In addition to Yes Magazine, what other resources are available for people who would like to attune themselves to a new story and better understand how their lives are affected by the stories they tell themselves?
That's very hard to respond to because there are so many. There are so many organizations working on these issues. There's a group called the New Economy Coalition, which you can find on the web, which just for the United States is an alliance now of over 100 organizations, all of which are devoted to advancing an economy that is just and sustainable. You know, any of the organizations that are working on progressive causes are part of contributing to the new story. You know, what I'm arguing is that in addition to the doing, we need to be telling the story as we are living it so that we recognize how all these initiatives fit together into a larger story, a larger outcome, and that in fact they are all very intimately related.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That there is a possibility that if we get our story right, and you know, I think the people who've read Change the Story, Change the Future tell me that it really touches them deeply. Many of them are reading it for a second, third time. It's a wonderful way to start. And then, you know, find what is your passion, what is your gift, and reach out to your community and your neighbors and join together to help bring this new future into being, and recognizing that our greatest source of happiness is being a contributing, positive member of a living community that is creating conditions that improve the lives of all of us in caring relationship with one another.
Well, thanks so much for being here, David.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be back with you again, and I thank you very much for helping us get out these messages.
You are just listening to David Korten, author of Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth, published in 2015 by Barrett Kohler Publishers. For more information, check on the web at livingeconomiesforum.org and yesmagazine.org. Again, livingeconomiesforum.org and yesmagazine.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM. And KEXP.org.